You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I am one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. And for the first time in a long time, I'm back to doing a solo podcast. I know you guys all missed me. I hope you enjoyed this one. Today, I am breaking down Miles Turner's season. I'm going to do a summary of it, what I like, what I didn't like, where he could improve, his role next season. And I might even bring on a special guest for a couple minutes to end the show who's the biggest Miles Turner fan that I know that isn't in Pacers Twitter world. Without further ado, let's get to today's podcast. So let's start with the summary. I think Turner's season can be summed up in a tale of like three seasons. I mean, really three parts to his season. So we'll start with the first part, which was his first 18 games or so from the start of the season until basically around Thanksgiving time. And before he missed his first game with some injury, he had a few this year. I can't remember which one this was. At this point, he was averaging, I believe, 11 points per game, 5.4 rebounds, and shooting 46 from the field and 20% three. He was having a pretty miserable season. Now, at this point, he had still improved defensively. You could definitely see the payoffs from a better body that he got in the summer, from the work he had done. He was averaging 2.6 blocks per game, and he was still anchoring one of probably at this time the best defenses in the NBA, and he was doing a really good job at it. So despite his offensive woes, he was still defensively a stalwart, one of the best 5-10 defensive players in the league, or at least rim protector wise. But his shots were down. It seemed like he had basically just improved defensively and had not even worked on his offensive game, and it was not coming around. But the Pacers were fine. The first 18 games, I think the Pacers ended up like 12-6. I mean, they were fine. It didn't matter really to the team. They're winning plenty of games. Like, it didn't affect him how bad he was playing. But after the injury, things turned. All of a sudden, there's this stretch from November 26 until his next set of games that he missed in early January where he just shot through the roof. Oladipo missed, I believe, his 11 games during this run, but Turner averaged nearly 15 points per game on 8.7 rebounds on a 55% shooting and 52.5% from three. I think this might be the greatest 20-game run of Turner's career, I would dare to say. It was incredible. If you even extrapolate that thing out to if we make it a good 35-game run, you're looking at a 35-game run of still 15 points per game, 7.8 rebounds on 53-47-70 shooting splits. I mean, that's if that Turner had brought it for 80 or 70-something games he played, that's probably an all-star level center because of his defense, and that's probably a guy you're thinking, oh, this guy's somebody you can build around. I mean, he was taking, I guess, only 2.7 threes per game and 11.2 shots, but you're thinking this guy's your number two option on maybe a championship team, at worst case, third option. But obviously, that is not really who Turner is in that sense. He's somewhere not where he was as bad to start the year, but not as good as he was mid-year, and he's somewhere in the middle, and that's where you kind of get this last 21-game stretch from late February until the end of the season, where he was good. 13 points a game, 7.7 rebounds on 43-35 shooting. Now, his shooting percentage is not great, but it's not terrible. This is the player Turner is. I think he's more of a high 40s to mid-40s percent shooter. For a center, that's not great, but for a center, it takes threes. He's taking about 3.5 threes per game by this point, and that's about a third of his shots. And shooting 36% from three is positive. I mean, that's a player who is probably your third or fourth best option on a championship team. And considering his defense, you don't necessarily need him to have like these 20, 25-point game explosions. You just need him to be the really good defensive player that he is. Now, do I think his defense is not as valuable as he was a great offensive player? Yes. I think there is so much value in having a really good offensive player in terms of the way defenses and other teams respect you. You know, there's a lot of guards in this league who are considered top-level players, and they're really not very good defenders. But for a center-wise, Turner is in the top five of defensive centers. I mean, I'm thinking the Goberts, the Embiids. I don't know where you put Giannis. He's in that range of defensive player, probably the step below, but in that level. And that kind of defense is so valuable, but, you know, they say defense wins championships, but we haven't really seen the full translation of his great defense leading to great playoff success. And that's kind of where the last part of the season was. And he didn't really have a great playoffs, I thought. I'm going to pull up his numbers real quick from those games. But if you look at it, it was not a great year for Turner in the playoffs. Another kind of mediocre run. Obviously, the Patriots didn't win a game, so that doesn't help. But if you look at his playoff stats real fast, as I'm pulling them up as I'm trying to talk, great podcasting. He averaged 9.8 points per game on 40, 21, 61 shooting. He took a total of 8.8 shots per game. I mean, this was by far his worst playoffs. Even though I thought he wasn't great in the playoffs last year, he averaged 12.4 points on 61, 42 shooting. And so that's incredible. That's a nice stat line. Now, I think game to game, he was shaky. The thing about the playoffs, too, is his shots go down. I mean, he averaged about 10 to 11 shots per game. During the season, it was more like 7.7 last year and 8.8 this year. And so, I mean, I think there's a certain playoff assertiveness you don't see from Turner. He gets into foul trouble. He's averaging nearly 4 fouls a game in the playoffs versus the rest of them, he's averaging more like 2.5 to, I mean, his peak was 3.2 3 years ago now. The thing with Turner is offensively, he has probably not gotten any better than he was 3 years ago, but defensively he's gotten so much better, and it's one of those things where there's not any paper stats that show that value, but you can see it if you watch the games. And that's kind of my biggest thing with Turner, and his biggest flaw and biggest need to improve where it is that he needs to become an offensive player who has a move, a go-to move, a whatever it is, something that is makes him distinguishable, that you can rely on to go to score points, because it feels like he doesn't have that. It feels like he's a mediocre to okay 3-point shooter. He can sometimes get guys off the dribble depending on who the big man is. He can sometimes run the pick and roll. He can sometimes get the open, but it's not like he has like a move. You know, you can't, you know, even like Roy Hibbert back in the day, and by far not a great offensive player, but he was the kind of guy you knew you could feed him in a low post and he could do a little back down throw up, you know, 5-foot 2-point shot. He could make it at a decent rate, and in the playoffs, especially that was like a Pacers bread and butter for him. He would average like 28. I mean, he was averaging like 20 plus points a game in some of the big playoff series where Hibbert was, because he was just like, you kept feeding him down low, kept feeding the ball, and he kept scoring. And Turner needs to have something like that. Now, is his biggest offensive strength that he's just a 3-point shooter? And if he can just become a consistent 3-point shooter who shoots 5, 6, 7 of the game, that might be it. That might be the solution to this whole problem. But until he develops some kind of like go-to consistent offensive move, he's going to be held back offensively, which is going to hold him back in general, because he is such a good defensive player. He will never not be on the court. Like, the Nets are not going to not play him. They're not going to place a bonus over him at times because he's such a valuable defensive player. But it's holding him back from really becoming an all-star, from becoming talked about as one of the best centers in the league. I mean, you know, I'm not saying he needs to have Joel Embiid level just post-play, but like, maybe Gobert level post play. I mean, just something where he can, like, you can rely on him. And, you know, I wonder if that will be, you know, for the past 2 or 3 off seasons, I've consistently kind of harped on, okay, what's he going to do? Is he going to improve his shot? Is he going to improve this part of his game? Well, last summer, he clearly hit the gym and he clearly worked on his defensive movements and not being a liability. Because I think he learned from the playoff series against the Cavs that he has to be able to be switched onto a smaller player and play defense. And he certainly could do that. Now, I'm not saying he's perfect at it, the greatest player at it, but he was certainly very good at it. And that kind of skill set defensively becomes huge, because he's 7-foot long arms. And if he has good feet and be able to guard guards, all of a sudden, I mean, defensively, it's like he can do everything. I mean, he becomes one of the most valuable defensive players because he's got size, so he can guard anybody, big, small. I remember there was a play this year where he got switched on Devin Booker. Booker kind of tried to go around the rim and lay it in, Turner recovered on him and swatted against and pinned against the glass. I mean, that's the kind of thing he couldn't do 2 years ago. So whether it's just, you know, changing his focus from his defensive, whatever he works on, to working on his 3-point shot more, working on his more on some kind of post move per se. I mean, he's got to stop shooting long twos. Maybe it's just court awareness. I mean, I think his biggest problem, I would say, is that he also took a lot of like these 18, 20-foot twos, and part of that might have been Nate McMillan not kind of telling him he didn't have to do that. But like, what's the point of taking a 20-foot shot when a 23-foot shot is worth one more point and it's probably the same percentage? I mean, he only took 2.6 threes per game. In today's NBA, that needs to be at 5. I mean, let's be honest. And I don't know if they're waiting until they have a coach who can really be kind of up his ass telling him he has to be able to
He has to take 5 threes a game and not take the 20 footers. But that's something he's got to change. Maybe it's something he's got to do himself because the coaches aren't motivating him. Because taking those 20 foot shots is useless and not as valuable. And the Pacers probably used to play a lot of close games. And extra point or two here and there is really important for the team. So, that's where I see him needing to improve the most. Another thing I liked about Turner this season, though, is he continues to be a good locker room, whatever you want to call it, guy for the team. Oladipo got hurt, whatever it was, he still brought it every night. He was definitely part of that class of leadership guys, I would say, like Thad. Yeah, really all the guys on the team really kept it going. There was no feeling down or sad for themselves because Oladipo got hurt. They all kind of brought it at a level, but he was part of that, and he's one of the leaders of the team now. He's going to be, especially because there's a roster turnover this offseason, he's going to be looked at as one of the leaders. He's now entering his fifth year. He's entering that big contract. He's now going to be the second highest paid player on the team. Probably will remain that way next year, barring some major trade, maybe he'll be the third highest player. But he's going to be looked at as like he's the number two or three guy on this team. And he's going to have to continue to, be a guy. And I think it'll be important, especially for younger guys, so whoever they draft with their pick, whether that's Aaron Holiday too, developing as well. These are all things he's going to need to do next season. And it's going to, and hopefully that's where he kind of continues to help other guys improve in a way that helps the team overall. Whether it's the positivity of, maybe he gets benched for most of the times. Just being able to still be a positive player and not be bitter about where he's put in certain moments or whatever it is. If he's playing at last 5 minutes or not. Because assuming the Pacers don't trade Sabonis, which I'm not sure they will, next year is the year where they decide. If they don't trade Sabonis, they try to re-sign him, and then they have the 2-1 contracts, and they make a decision of which one is our guy, and they play him a lot together or whatever it is, and he's going to have to figure out how to do that too. I don't know how he's able to play Sabonis, but he's going to figure out how to make that work if he wants Sabonis to still be on the team in 2 years. So that's where they're kind of at with him. Contract-wise, I don't think his contract is an albatross. I think he's probably the most fairly paid player on the team. I think $18 million is right what he's worth. Obviously, he could exceed that if he ends up becoming a better offensive player. He all of a sudden could exceed that value. But I think he's perfectly paid right now for his skill set. I think that's good for the Pacers. I think that's why they probably don't end up training him anyways, because I think he's properly paid, and maybe Sabonis is properly paid too, but I feel like Sabonis is somebody who could be looking at saying, if you look at my extrapolated stats, if I played 36 minutes or whatever it was, I can play that many, but if I played more minutes, I would have better stats and I'd be a better contract. I always felt like Turner's contract mirror image was going to be Capella's of 5 years, 90, and I think Sabonis could be heading that way, depending on how it is. Now, maybe Sabonis signs the same contract as Turner, and they just both are on the same deal. They want to stay together. That's part of the whatever agreement, or that's the talk. I don't know. Something's got to happen with Turner and Sabonis because whatever it happens, they're not getting the maximum value out of that player because they can't play them together, right? Even if Sabonis and Turner are both good independently, you need five guys at the end of games that a team needs, and if they can play on the court together, there's a lot of value in that. And if you can flip one of Turner or Sabonis for one of those guys, that becomes value. I still think you'll lean towards Sabonis and keep Turner because of his contract, because of his status on the team, because of his defense. It's just so good. I don't know how you replace it even with Sabonis. But there is a chance next year, depending on how Sabonis plays, that could change. That could easily change, depending on what contract Sabonis gets and all that stuff. So I think this is another big offseason for Turner. He's still super young. He's only entering his 23rd-year-old season. So it's another big offseason for him, and he needs to continue to improve. And I think, at some point he becomes the player he is. And this year I kind of became resigned to that fact. But maybe, just maybe, he can become even a better player. We've seen guys kind of develop in their mid-20s. Early to mid-20s, it happened to Oladipo. He kind of developed around really 25. So there is hope for Turner that he could somehow develop offensively and become the player we all want him to become, have all thought he could become, the player that Larry Bird said could be the best player in the NBA. I'll take a quick break, and like I said, I'll have the most ardent Turner supporter I know. Welcome back in the Locked On Pacers podcast. So I teased a guest before, and I'm bringing on, because we must know we're not off-season mode when I do this, bringing on my girlfriend Marina Higuera. It's been on, fourth, fifth time now?
A couple in-season times, too.
Well.
Not just
We are in off-season mode. Just gonna do so. She is a huge Miles Turner fan, I would say, at the least. You know, I know.
Not as a player, just I love him.
I know you like Turner as a person, which is great. I mean, he's a great guy. So there is definitely this divide. Let's put this clip nicely on Twitter, because there's a decent based Twitter community. You know, it's not like Lakers or Knicks Twitter, but it's strong and it's loud and it's active.
It seems very active.
They're divided on Miles Turner. You know, there's a group of people who will defend him until they're dead, essentially, that Turner is great, nothing he can do is wrong. Then there's a group who sees him as not living up to the hype or whatever it is, and that they should trade him every minute, and that every time he's a mistake, they highlight it. And obviously, I think Turner falls somewhere in between.
So
where
it's more like that than choosing him or
he's the
Sabonis?
Most. I would say
is
he's,
that the argument, or is
I would
the
say
argument
he,
more
well,
like
I think
he's
part
worth
of it.
The money or not worth the money?
I think it's a little bit of both. So I think Sabonis is part of it. You're a Sabonis fan. You also feel that way about Turner in a way. I think though he's the most divisive Pacer player.
No, I think Bojan is.
No, not divide.
That's
yeah,
personally.
Okay.
My personal opinion.
But not, but like, on Pacer Twitter, Turner is the most divided because you get so many different opinions for him.
Yeah.
And that's why. So you are the one I in fact, talk to the most as a fan of him.
Yes.
So what would you want to see Miles Turner improve next season? Okay, you can't.
Well,
make,
I was what?
You have to talk on the podcast. You can't just make noises.
You gave me like 0.8 seconds to say anything. That's disappointing. Anyways. I was reminiscing on last year's one that we did for the same reason and talking about like, oh, is he even gonna be able to stay healthy the whole season? And he did. Proud of him for that, right? He did stay healthy the whole time.
Mainly, yeah. He missed a few games. There was nothing that was like major. He had a couple, you know, occasional little back spasm, I think, and a
maybe
the injury.
But he wasn't out for
No weird extended period of time, like an elbow injury or a concussion.
I guess the only thing I would say I want him to do is to be able to, how do I phrase it correctly? I get really disappointed when people are like, oh my God, Miles Turner is great at blocks and he's like one of the league leaders in so many of these statistics and can I swear? We hate him. Am I allowed to? No. Okay. I don't know what it takes to, like, convince people that... I'm not, like, one of those crazy fanatic people, as much as I say that I like him. I'm not going to defend everything that he does. And I don't know how much he was paid for his contract. Adam's looking at the time like, please stop rambling. I have no idea what I'm trying to say. It seemed like a lot of money to me. For someone that gets
so you
want
to live up to his hype of his contract,
yeah,
right?
I guess.
I think I said in the last time that he's the most fairly paid Pacer player, which means that like you want him to live above his contract almost like Oladipo, mm-hmm. Oladipo makes about $20 million a year, which is for an NBA player actually low for a guy of his caliber.
Right.
Guy his caliber make about 30, so Turner making 18 means he's in that level of like you're good,
yeah,
not great,
but you're above average, but
yeah,
you're not like
you're a top 60 NBA player, but you're not one of those guys where if you're on the court, I'm always thinking about you, where you're at. I'm thinking that you can make a big difference. I'm thinking of you as a guy who fits in a role and plays your role really well.
I don't even know if it's like exceeding his contract payment so much as like doing. I don't know what it would take to make people say he's. For someone removed from the community who mostly just sees Tony's tweets flooding every time there's a game of Miles and like screenshots of his progress or like from the Pacers or whatever of him being like he's there to block, right? He's really tall.
Defensive player to play defense, yes.
Yes, like he's good at that. Like he's great at that. So do people just want him to be more dynamic and be like really great offensively, or like what will
yeah.
it take to?
Yeah,
okay.
He needs to develop an offensive game. That's his biggest thing. If he can develop some kind of consistent offensive move, which says last, I said this when I started the show, some consistent offensive move where he can hit.
Whether with the threes when I gave you that look.
Shoot a bunch of threes and make him out of 35% rate. Like shoot 5 takes a game, or can he? You know,
can
he get the ball and post him, and he can do what Sabonis does and. Back guy down and hit him off the
shot. I was making sure the kitchen didn't burn down. I'm so sorry that I wasn't paying attention
to
the beginning.
Yeah, so I mean, that's what if he does that, he all of a sudden becomes a whole different player. I'm just afraid he won't be able to do that.
Why?
Because he hasn't done it yet. At some point, you are the player you are, right?
Yeah.
You know, every year you can say, oh, you can do this.
So you would have expected him to do that once like Vic was gone.
Well, he's entering year five. Usually, guys, year one, you see some glimmer of hope, which you saw with Turner. Year two, you see an improvement, which you saw with Turner.
Then year three or four,
you see
you
kind of
hit your stride.
This growth. You see this. Usually, you make a big leap in year three or four. See this growth. Well, no, because he's 23. So usually, an NBA player, they come when they're 19, if they're young like him. They're not very strong. They need to get stronger. They need to work out. They need to develop.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then they. So that's what they do the first year.
Unless you're Zion.
Zion's a once in a generation talent.
Crush me.
Then the second year, you need a guy to develop some kind of game. Like offensively, some kind of move. That's what they do. They develop that. Then by year three, they put both together and they jump a level.
And you have a...
That happened to Paul George and all that stuff. Yeah, it was that's what he did. So.
But I mean, he's also been hurt. Like
yeah, so that was my thought. Year three, he was hurt constantly. Maybe happens year four. This was the first year to play healthy, and we didn't really see that leap offensively. We saw a leap defensively, but not offensively.
Yeah.
He stayed kind of... Really, honestly, more like he was, well, I guess more like he was his second year, but it was a very steady year. I mean, look at points per game. I mean, that's a kind of a, not a great set to always look at, but it was like he went up to 14.5 year two, then down to 12.7, up to 13.3. So he's somewhere in the middle between his year two and year three level player. Shooting wise, better percentages for sure, but not that much better than year three. So I feel like he is the player he is going forward, which is fine. He's still a good NBA player, but he's just not one of those, you know. World-moving type of NBA players.
But do you need, like, obviously not everyone on your team.
No.
And not everyone in the league can be like that. Like, you already have someone that you would consider as...
So I think Turner's your best player. He's best in your team if you're third or fourth best player. You need two guys who can create their own, do their own thing. And you need a third guy who understands his role, but is good still and can be kind of whatever. And that's Turner's best role. Turner, I think at one point we thought Turner could be the number two to Oladipo.
Yeah.
But I think at this point, Turner's best option is as number three, even maybe number four. You bring in two really good guys, because even this year, I would say that Bojan might have surpassed him in terms of level. I mean, he might have. Bojan offensively was amazing. So,
but I get like in terms of what you need from the people listening are like, you're already explaining things that we already know. But what do you value more, like five? Offensive players that are mediocre on defense, or like.
Well, that's the point. That's why his stats you have are unmeasurable, and it's kind of that's the problem.
So then, why is that not like?
It's good, but to be an NBA player, you have to be good at both offense and defense, or extraordinarily good.
Turner is at one,
where Turner is really good, but he's not extraordinarily good. I mean, Rudy Gobert is a player. He's not great offensively, but he's an extraordinary defensive player.
Yeah,
he can pick his spots defensively. Turner is still not quite there. Now, maybe Turner becomes an extraordinary defensive player next season, and that's the difference.
But like, would you say Bojan is extraordinary?
No, but that's but Bojan is where Turner was at
okay.
on the offensive
return. In a quicker time period.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the thought. I still like Turner going into next year. I think he's going to be a good player. I think he can improve a little bit on the margins. And I think they'll bring in somebody to be that number two role next year, next to Oladipo. And we'll see if Turner, because Turner's really good at fitting into his spots and playing his role. So maybe he'll find his
chemistry.
Yeah, I think he'll find his comfort spot at the number three spot behind, whether it is Oladipo and Mike Conley or a Drew Holiday. I think that might be the winner. I think it's the lottery. Or somebody else. Whoever they figure out to be the number two guy, I think that's what's going to ultimately happen. Marina, thanks for coming on. You can follow Marina at Marina Higuera.
Yeah, I tweeted about the podcast earlier.
Oh, she did.
Like 5 minutes ago.
All right. Well, listen to the podcast. It happened yesterday.
Oh, wait. Yeah, 24 hours. No, wait, no. Like 12 hours and 5 minutes ago.
Yes, probably.
I tweeted this.
She tweeted that at 8:44 Central Time. So check that out. You can follow the podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at Friedman Adam 5.
8:39, 5 minutes ago. Sorry, I'm done.
You can follow me at Friedman Adam 5. That is all for the Locked On Pacers podcast. Tony and I will be back on Monday with our weekly show. For now, have a great weekend.